Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
Welcome to the latest PR Moment podcast. It's a special edition today. This is a recording that we originally did for the Creative Moment podcast, where we talked to Harvard's Mark Allenby and Daniel Maynard from Disney about their experience as gay men in the creative sector. It's such an important topic, we thought we'd include it on the feed for the PR Moment podcast as well. Enjoy. Today, I'm catching up with Mark Allenby, ECD of both Harvard and Eat the Fox, which are part of the Chime Group. We're also talking to Daniel Maynard, who's Vice President Communications, Media, Television and Direct-to-Consumer Europe and Africa at the Walt Disney Company. Before we start, just a reminder to all of you that the PR Moment Awards are now open for entries and all the details on the awards microsite prmoments.com. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about Mark and Daniel's experiences as gay men working in the creative sector. Guys, welcome to the Creative Moment podcast.
Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Good. Ben, thanks for having me.
Great to have you on today, guys. Now, first of all, can we just, a bit of an outliner, if you like, can we just set the scene, first of all? Do either of you feel that being gay has had a detrimental effect on, or a detrimental impact, I should maybe say, on your career in the creative sector?
Who wants to go first? Daniel?
Go right ahead. You go right ahead.
Okay, I mean... Yeah, cool. I mean, firstly, I'm just going to say that I'm really proud that I'm gay. You know, I've met some remarkable people within the community. I've experienced life in ways I've never imagined, and I feel completely liberated from it. I love my sexuality, which is a far, far cry from my early years. And I kind of, I think that rolls really nicely into what you do, you know, because I do think it does impact your work. And I do think kind of, you know, as a creative, you are very soulful. You know, everything comes from your heart. It's very emotionally based. So I definitely think that when you feel positive, when you feel liberated about who you are, that definitely shines through into your work and definitely reflects that, you know, in all outputs. And that's not just from what you create, but actually how you kind of like manage people, how you manage your teams, how you kind of form part of a leadership. You know, you start to kind of lead through that confidence and that liberation. And I, you know, I do feel really privileged that, you know, I'm at an age now where I have been given that space, the trust and the support, you know, to do things the way I think is right. And I have to say, you know, kind of, you know, the CEO of Eat the Fox and Harvard, Louis, has been a massive support in that. So it's been awesome. You know, like it definitely has for me, it's had a fantastic positive impact.
And that's just... Going back to the question a little bit, that obviously now you've got to a great spot. I get the feeling with you, Mark, it's been a bit of a journey, but we'll come on to that later. But is that, to just give us a little insight into whether earlier on in your career you felt it had a detrimental effect, I guess, within the relationships you had with people in the work or clients, or has it always been okay?
It's definitely been a journey, I'm not going to lie. You know, like like you say, we'll probably get into that, but... you know, childhood was difficult. You know, it posed a lot of challenges, and I've still got demons from that, from those experiences. But the more you grow, the more, you know, the better you become, like the more confident you become, because people around you give you that confidence. They give you that platform. They give you the reason to believe because they believe in you. So it's a very transitional process. And I don't think that's, you know, always about being sexuality. It's about the person who you are. But yeah, I'm sure we can go into it in a bit more detail later on, for sure.
Go on, Daniel. What were you going to say?
No, I was smiling away because I totally agree. And I think, Mark, to your point, you know, what you do and what I do are completely different, but yet we are in the creative industry. And, you know, the area that I work in is reputation and reputational management. And so when I look at the work that you do or the work that pure creatives do, having a different tone of voice, having a different point of view, having different experiences and backgrounds, and that, like you say, doesn't always have to be sexual orientation, definitely allows for better work, more diverse work that reflects more people in society, I guess. To your first question, Ben, around has it had a detrimental impact on my career? I mean, I would like to think no. I feel very lucky in the fact that I've worked for some great organizations. And while, you know, I didn't come out till I was in my early 20s, and I was still really figuring it out myself. And I think there is a perception that in the creative industry, it's like total safe environment. And, you know, everybody must be gay in the creative industries. It's TV or it's, you know, advertising or it's whatever, you know, whatever it is. And I actually don't think that's the case. I think you're probably right that in some more traditional industries, like, you know, finance or banking, these are just huge assumptions that I've just massively made, that perhaps it is a little bit more challenging. But I think in the creative industries, you would expect it to be an easier, more accepting place. And I think on the whole, it probably is. But I still don't think it makes it any easier when you are still figuring it out yourself and you're in the workplace. And what does that mean? And will that change perceptions of you and how people might react to you based on being different or based on having different interests than perhaps colleagues or clients?
I think that's a really good point. I think, you know, back when, you know, in my early career, the workplace was very male dominated, you know, from that very traditional kind of, you know, masculinity. Yeah. And that was absolutely terrifying walking into that kind of, into that environment, because you had to create almost an act about, you know, because you wasn't open. I certainly didn't have the confidence to be like, I'm Mark and I'm gay. You know, that was like, that was never kind of a thing to do. It was like, I just need to kind of get through this. I need to be accepted for to prove my worth as a creative, right, let alone a kind of a sex thing. But it was terrifying walking into those environments because there were some very dominating kind of men in those environments, you know, really dominating. And it was all about kind of football, like, you know, kind of the sex of female colleagues. And you just think, oh my God, I can't believe I'm having to play along with this because actually I feel really awkward, you know, about it. But unfortunately, I didn't have the strength or the confidence to kind of say, hang on a minute, I'm gay and I don't really want to be part of this conversation, because you was too young, or, you know, you just wanted to be accepted, you know. And that's looking back, that was kind of really difficult.
Did you feel like, I'm trying to, I guess, relate to some of my earlier roles where I wasn't out, and maybe it's, I mean, I was still figuring it out myself, but did you have any plans to come out at work? Was that kind of part of your a plan, or had you always just assumed that you would have your work life and your private life and they would be separate?
I think, to be honest, I've never really even thought about it, you know, because I think it was just about surviving. About actually getting through the day to day and like making some money, kind of getting my foot in the door, kind of making a career for myself. It was almost like my sexuality was kind of secondary. Do you know what I mean? But I think as you get older and the wiser you get, the kind of the more confidence you get, and actually it does become really important to you. And you know, again, it's great that we're having this conversation today, you know, with yourselves and Ben. It's you know, to have this open discussion is really awesome. And I really just want to quickly say thanks for giving us that platform and the voice to kind of be able to have this conversation. I think it's a really positive thing to do.
Well, it's the least we could do. But Daniel, one of the things when we chatted before, which really made me think, was the idea that as a gay man, you have to sort of come out where at every new job you start, if you see what I mean. So you have to go through it all again. And I'd never really thought about that before, but that must be quite exhausting, is it? Just talk to us about that.
I think, you know, this whole conversation, the reason that kind of Mark and I met and kind of had this conversation is because I kind of mentioned this to a mutual friend of Mark and I's that kicked off a conversation that led to something else. And now here we are on a podcast, which is quite brilliant. But yeah, there are things that you don't know, you know, and I can only come at this from a position of obviously a 20-something-year-old white gay guy. You know, my life is my experience, and I can only see it from I can only have the experience that I can have from my perception. But yeah, you know, especially my 20s, when I was still figuring out my sexuality, and I just to know if I could be brave enough, I guess, to kind of talk about my sexuality and be more comfortable in who I was as an individual. To your point, Mark, when you're trying to make a career, you're trying to move forward, and you have ambition, and there's all these things you want to do. And I moved to the BBC like my late 20s, or mid to late 20s, moved to the BBC, and I actually thought to myself, ah, this could actually be the first job I've had. And I started working at 18. I went to university of life and haven't really looked back. And I thought, you know, this could actually be the first job in which I just tell people immediately, or I proactively bring it up in a way so I can be gay from the start. And it doesn't have to be one of those, you just have to keep coming out all the time, or like you do a couple of years and then suddenly people find out and it's like, oh, but Dan gay or gay Dan, do you know what I mean? And you've become this person. And I think, you know, we are fortunate in the fact of when we were born, Mark, and kind of like, you know, we are standing on the shoulders of people that came before us, and our journeys have been so much easier because of the fights and the conversations that people have had before us. They have definitely led the way. And I think now, generationally, if I can speak, I think I would like to think it's hopefully easier for people in their 20s or starting their careers, that actually some of the stuff that we've done, Mark, in our careers have changed. But there wasn't really that many people I saw at work that were out. And so, yeah, you do definitely think about that. And I had three jobs before that where I was straight, or I wasn't out. And then there's that realization. Then it's always that moment where you talk to somebody about it, or it comes up and people make an assumption, like you say, Mark, they talked about the football, or, you know, they ask, you know, if you've got a girlfriend or a wife, and you kind of go, oh, no, you know, my husband or my boyfriend or whatever. And you get that slight moment of, okay, cool. Which is fine. Of course, it's fine that they would have that reaction, but you never quite know what the reaction is going to be. And there's always just that awkward moment where it shouldn't be awkward. And I would like to think it is less awkward now than maybe it was 10 years ago, than maybe it was 15 years ago. But there is that when you start a new job and you kind of go into a workplace, you don't quite know who those personality mixes are within that workplace and how that may or may not affect.
And it's presumably extremely difficult. I mean, it's one of those things, you can't really give advice on how people should do that, is it? Because it just depends on them, it depends on the company, it depends on their colleagues. It's a difficult old scene, isn't it, to judge that, you know, whether you're just honest from the start or you know, what, you know.
It's got to come down to you, for sure. It's got to come down to you.
Yeah, and I do think it comes with age, you know, like definitely as I've got older, and I think to your point, Daniel, you know, like I think the last interview I had, I was just like, yeah, I'm gay and I've got, I live with my partner and blah, blah, blah. Whereas maybe in my, 20s, 30s, I wouldn't have been so forthcoming. In fact, I think it has been like a history of coming out at work. You know, I think the first time I came out at work was at a Christmas party, really, really drunk. And I announced it to the whole company, like, I'm gay, you know, that was the 30-year-old of me. Do you know what I mean? And now it's like, it's kind of, and I do sometimes think as well, it's like you build it up so much in your head.
Yeah.
Like the reality is never as, you know, the reality is always better than what you think in your head.
Yeah. I mean, as a heterosexual man, if that is the right description, I just wouldn't have thought anyone cares, but I suppose some people do, and also within in your head there's that fear that people might. I suppose is sort of a bit of both those things going on, I guess.
I think, like, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it all stems down to your experiences as a childhood. You know, your early experiences, and I think that definitely carries through to you. You know, as much as you don't want it to carry on, it's still in your subconscious somewhere. And, you know, those memories are still quite raw in a way that, you know, because they were so traumatic, actually, as a child, you know, they're in your back of your head somewhere. And it's always, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of a nerve-wracking thing sometimes, you know, like I don't think anyone who hasn't been through it kind of probably doesn't realize kind of the amount of trauma you've gone through to be who you are, if that makes sense.
Sure. I mean, we'll talk about it now, actually, Mark. It's fairly clear that your childhood experiences as a gay child have had quite a significant impact on your adulthood.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a big kind of question, you know, and I could talk about it all day. But, you know, you have to kind of put yourselves back to a time, you know, time before the internet. It was a time when AIDS, HIV was a new thing. You know, I don't know if you remember this, but I'll never forget kind of the advert by the government with this massive boulder falling on the floor, and it was just like, oh my God, we're all going to die. You know, you can't, you're never going to be able to have sex because you're going to die. But no one explained it to you. You know, as a young kid, like, there's no sex education at school, didn't talk about AIDS, didn't talk about anything like that. So you had to kind of work it out yourself. And that working out yourself took a bloody long time because, again, there was no internet. There was no one to talk to. It was, being gay was not a cool thing. You know, being gay was disgusting. It was a dirty, like, there was no role models. You know, I mean, I'm from, you know, the northeast of England, and you know, it was hard. I mean, my own granddad, God love him, which I totally did, you know, said, oh, we should get all them gays and, you know, put them on an island and kind of shoot them all. You know, that was the attitude, you know. And when you get brought up in that environment, like, the last thing you're going to do is think, oh my God, I'm gay. I'm, you know, like, you don't, you suppress it. And that suppressment is really affects you. And it's, you know, it's taken me a lot, you know, well, you know, thankfully I'm fine. I am who I am now, but it took me a good deal. I'm going to say, like, at least I'm going to 5 to 10 years to kind of get over that, kind of get over that mental trauma and start to kind of build my confidence up. I mean, at school, it was dreadful, you know, the amount of bullying because you were different. You know, I think my life started when I went to art college. All of a sudden at the age of 16, I wasn't that weirdo anymore. You know, I was accepted, and that's when I started to become me. You know, I started to kind of build that foundation of, like, getting my confidence, believing in who I was. You know, it wasn't about sex. It was about kind of making me who I am. And then the sex kind of came a lot later. But yeah, it was a testing time, I have to be honest.
Were you out of school? Well done for getting to where you are. It's amazing. Daniel, one of the things we talked about earlier was, again, something I hadn't thought about before, but compared to other minority groups, when you walk into a room, people don't know you're gay, if you know what I mean. And so there's that sort of site. Well, you have to make a decision. Are you going to tell people? Are you going to announce it, if you see what I mean? Which is just another element to this that it's just an interesting part of how to manage the whole process, I suppose, as an individual.
Yeah, I think that there's actually another colleague, a really, really good colleague of mine, who's moved over from the US recently. And it was a conversation we were having, obviously, last year. There was such seismic changes in discussions around diversity, you know, obviously around Black Lives Matter and that big societal shift, and the right conversations and the important conversations that we should be having. And she actually made a point to me. We were talking about diversity, and she kind of said, do you know what, Dan, but, you know, you can't walk into a room and people would necessarily know that you're gay. Like, obviously, if you, you know, if you're a woman, or if you're of a different minority, or if you're disabled or whatever, that, you know, you are immediately recognizable as that thing. And therefore, there are conversations that can't be had, or discrimination that cannot happen, whatnot. But obviously, no one can tell you that you're gay. And I'm like, well, probably if they've met me, they're probably good. But still, on the whole, you're right. You have to come to a place where you do talk about it. You do have to admit to, or come out, or declare that you are different. Because I think there is perception that everybody is the same until they're not. You know, my husband works in a completely different industry. It's still, I guess, within media, but really within the construction industry. And he's on construction sites, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. And so he, you know, he'll come home and be like, yeah, so there was another conversation. And he would, you know, for perhaps if you were to meet him, he might not necessarily strike you as someone who could be gay. And so he does spend quite a lot of time having those conversations about football, or having to, like, say to the guys on site or whatever, like, you know, my husband or whatnot. And I don't really have to have those conversations as much, but it is that moment. And to your point, Mark, and it was just really interesting, you know, listening to you about your childhood and school and growing up. And I'm curious to know if you were out at school or not. I certainly wasn't, but I don't think I
didn't even know what gay was. I mean, it just wasn't spoken about. You know, like I said, like, gay was always, you know, but, you know, again, it's like people like Freddie Mercury, you know, yeah. they were, you know, they were gay. We know they were gay, but at the time in the 80s, and the, you know, they wasn't overtly out. No one was out. you know, and so there was no kind of role models. There was no one kind of flying the flag. It was because no one, it was just, it just, it wasn't a thing. And certainly in the northeast of England, like being gay, like it was, it, like I said, it was so negative. It's like, it's almost like the last thing in the world you want to be is gay. You know, it was not a positive thing. And
so did you feel different, or did you think you were gay and just try and suppress it, or did you just not know?
I mean, I always knew I was different. You know, I was always that weird kid at school who kind of didn't follow the crowd. You know, I always kind of looked a bit different. I didn't wear the same trainers as everybody else. You know what I mean? I did my own thing, but I was singled out as oh God, that weirdo, like Mark, and oh, he's gay. You know, even like getting bullied, like kids from the age of like, I don't know, 9, just calling you gay. But no one knew what gay meant, but all you knew was that it wasn't a good thing to be called gay. It was full of, because it was just full of negativity, you know. And like I said, it was only, you know, kind of getting older in art college, university, then you start to kind of, you know, you meet other gay people, and it's much more kind of liberating. You know, you're in that kind of safe world. It's a great world to be in, because it supports you and it celebrates you. And it kind of gives you the confidence to kind of move on and kind of start being really accepted of who you are.
And just so you're both in clearly a great place now, within a work environment. What can companies do? What can leaders of companies do to create an environment and a culture that means that that they are a comfortable place for clearly gay men, gay women to work out, but also minorities more generally, I guess.
I think that I think it's down to individuals as much as it is about organisations. I think it's got to start from the top, and it's got to start with a culture of inclusive. And integrity and honesty. You know, ultimately, I've worked. You know, the smallest company I've worked for was a brilliant PR agency that was about 250 people. The biggest companies I worked for, we're talking thousands, multinational, thousands and thousands of individuals. And so, I think it's hard to strike that balance. I think it's probably easier for smaller companies that are nimble, that can kind of start from the top and create that environment of inclusiveness. But I think it's harder for bigger companies because it's just so big. But I think it's got to come from a place of authenticity and respect. That's the most important thing, allowing people to be themselves.
I agree with that. I think it has to come from the top. It has to come from the leadership, and it has to be part of the DNA of a company. I mean, I'm lucky. Chime is very, very diverse. I mean, you know, within Chime, we have Chime Q, which is like an inter-agency LGBTQ plus kind of group, which holds kind of events, throughout the year. It kind of brings in lots of really interesting speakers from a massive spectrum of industry. And, you know, but someone like Joe Parker, for example, who's the COO of Chime, you know, is a massive advocate for diversity. And she kind of she pushes that through, you know, and it becomes a policy. And I think that's really important, because I think if the leadership is talking about it freely, then that trickles down into the everyday and it just becomes normal, you know. And I think that's the whole thing about this. It's like, we don't want any special treatment. It's just about normality. It's about killing a taboo, you know, and that taboo is not just about sexuality. It's about everything, you know. It's like, let's just get it. Let's normalize it. You know, I think that's the most important job here for all of us to take away.
So you talked about a few specifics there, Mark. So it was that leadership is clearly important, but there was creating a community and a place for you to communicate with colleagues and that. Is there anything else that people that can do that you found has been useful? And same to you as well, Daniel, I guess.
I mean, I think it's, you know, it's just, again, it's all about culture, isn't it, for me? I think, you know, it's just can't take killing any kind of taboo. And it's about, I don't know, it's having freedom. It's about being kind of celebrating you know, like celebrating your diversity, celebrating your personality, allowing you to kind of shine, You know, and I think if you can walk into a workplace where if, you know, if you wanted to wear something different, then no one would look weird like you. No one would be like, what are you doing? You know, to have that complete kind of openness, I think is really healthy, you know, like really, really healthy. And I think, you know, just being in lockdown, you know, working at home is probably, is a real test of that, I think, as well. You know, like I kind of miss like that community at work where you kind of come in together and, you know, because I think you do, what you give off is really important as well, especially to like the younger generation who look up to you, you know, like it's really great for them to kind of see how you behave. And I think that inspires them. So for me, like the workplace is such an important place to be in, and as an environment of openness.
You know, it's where we spend most of our time. I mean, obviously right now we're all in our kitchens or our studies or our, wherever, our second back bedrooms or wherever people are now working from. But, and I think it is great to champion, and it is great to have those very visible processes, whether that's a pride group or whatever, you know. But I think that's great if that's relevant to your organization. That's great if that feels right for your organization, and I'm all for that. But I think on the very basis of it all, it has to come down to accountability. And I think that's around behavior. And I don't think it should be about championing diversity specifically, but I think it's holding people accountable for behavior. And I think that if you have an environment where, you know, you have people coming through who are 18, 22, 35, whatever, and they see individuals at any level of the organization treating people with nothing but disrespect, whether that's harassment or bullying or anger or discrimination or whatever it is, if they see that happening and then that being allowed to happen, you're never going to create a culture in which you're going to bring the best out in people. And the moment that you unlock that, the moment you hold people accountable for disrespect or not being kind, it's not hard. Just be kind. Just be smart and be kind and be respectful. The moment that you have created a culture that allows people to feel comfortable is the moment that you unlock real creativity, real passion, real productivity. And it doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight or a guy or a girl or, you know, however, whatever it is that makes you you, you just know that you're in an environment that you can be you, and that's the most important thing.
Sure. I agree with that.
It's a well-versed perspective these days, but guess what? If you have a minority creative, a diverse creative team, I should say, you'll create better work.
Yeah,
sure.
Definitely. And that kind of comes back to that point I made at the start, you know, like the feeling you have, the positive mental feeling kind of just shines through. And it, of course, it shines through on everything, your work, your kind of the way you talk to people, you know, the way you kind of conduct yourself, it can't be anything but good, right?
And if you have individuals of a diverse background in leadership positions or positions that can make decisions, it doesn't have to be leadership, boy, what a difference that can make. I mean, I really come from a TV background, and that's really where I play most of the time is within television. And I think, you know, if you just look at the differences and the strides we've made in the ways that issues are talked about on screen or the way characters are portrayed or storylines, we've come a long way. Like just, you know, this year alone or the start of this year, but in recently, you know, I think the Apple TV Plus documentary, six-part documentary visible out on television, it's very US-centric. It's a really interesting six-part doc around the portrayal of LGBT characters and storylines since the invention of television. But, you know, we've got, you know, It's a Sin is coming to Channel 4. It's Russell T Davies, who has been hugely influential in how people understand some of the plights of individuals who are gay. Obviously, that's set in the 80s. It's an issues. My understanding is it's set in the 80s, and it's an issues-based drama, I think, probably maybe around the time of your childhood, Mark. You know, we have a new show coming up called Love, Victor, which is set in the same universe of our film in 2016 called Love, Simon, which is fundamentally a boy meets boy story. It's a lovely 10-part, really nice kind of coming of age drama that it's not necessarily gay drama, but it just happens to be about a character that falls in love with another character of their same sex. And I think the more that we're normalizing it, the more that we're talking about it, the more people that have the ability to tell their story, and that is seen through creative, whether that's advertising or marketing or television or film or music or art or books, like, it can only be better, because the more we can see ourselves reflected back through our media, it makes sense to us because we recognize ourselves.
I agree. I had to Google actually, like yesterday, the first kind of gay snog on TV, and it was actually it was on EastEnders in 1989.
Of course it was.
Yeah, of course it was. But interestingly, like The Sun branded it a love scene between yuppie puffs. You know, that was their headline. You know, and I think we've come such a long way, haven't we? And it's taken like 30 years, you know, and isn't it refreshing that, you know, there's TV programming like RuPaul's Drag Race, the Queer Eye, yeah. You know, even seeing Harry Styles kind of on the front of Vogue in a skirt, you know, it's brilliant. And it becomes, you know, and it goes back to what we were saying, it becomes normal, you know, and culture does make things normal, doesn't it? You know, it's like, and I can't wait for the day that no one batters an eyelid of who you are, what you know, no matter about your kind of your sex, your race, your disability, where you're from. It's like, that's going to be awesome, because it is human nature, isn't it, to judge people, right? That's what we do.
Absolutely.
I suppose just thinking about that, I always look at the glass half full, perhaps, but in the UK, I would suggest we're not that far away from that, are we? I mean, there's always going to be people who are idiots, I guess. But globally, I guess things are not quite as positive, are they? It's a different environment if you go abroad to some different countries, which I suppose is worth touching on, right?
Yeah, we're so lucky to live in such a liberal world, you know, especially in the UK. I mean, you know, it's amazing. I mean, I just look at my nephew who came out at the age of 14, and he came out was like, oh, I've got a boyfriend. You know, it wasn't even, oh, I'm gay. It was just like, this is my boyfriend. And I just think, my God, like, that's amazing. Like, to be 14 and so open, you know, like, that to me just says everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Because all those scars, they're just not there. So it's
totally.
It's lovely, actually.
Yeah, it's so cool.
I do think we can never take it for granted. And I also worry, that's the wrong word. I also, again, can only look at it, you know, I live in London, I, you know, in my late 30s, I work in TV, like, you know, my perception of the world and my experience of the world is very different. I think you're right, Ben, we have seen in this last 5 or 6 years a real shift in change in terms of threats to our civil rights. You know, it was only in 2014 in the UK that we could legally get married. 2014 wasn't that long ago. So, you know, I grew up, like, when I really came to terms with my sexuality and started to be proud of it. I think you're right, Mark. You definitely get more confident with age. That's clearly, doesn't matter who you are or what your story is. But I, you know, there was a while that I really think I was ever going to be able to get married. And I didn't realize how not okay I was with that. Until it was finally made okay by people pushing the fight and doing way more than I've ever done for our community, but, you know, allowing us to have that. I don't think we can ever take it for granted. These things can easily be taken away, and, you know, while we should be very proud about the society we currently live in and our values within that society, like, You never do quite know.
I think we're so lucky to be in the generation we're in. I mean, you just look to the 60s, the 50s and earlier, you know, like, there must have been so men who were gay but would never be allowed to be gay. And that's so kind of upsetting, you know?
Yeah, it's tragic.
It is tragic. And I'm sure it still is apparent now. And, you know, we talk about the London bubble, but, you know, like, imagine, you know, if you're a minor and you're gay, but you're not allowed to be gay, or a fisherman, you know, it's like, I'm sure it's still very, very open. And we're only just coming to a society where sports people, for example, are starting to come out. You know, we have come a long, long way, but there's so much more to do.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mark, isn't it? I mean, that is just bizarre that more sports people don't feel that they are able to come out.
Yeah,
not for me to judge them, but I'm surprised that they don't feel that society is such that it's okay to do it, but there's clearly something that means that they're, you know, was it sponsors? I don't know. It's a very intriguing argument, isn't it? That one.
It really is. It's very, very intriguing. I just hope that, you know, in the next couple of 3 years, like, we'll see more of that. I definitely believe in the next generation. Definitely.
And I also think it's never cut and dry. Like, everybody's individual journey is their individual journey. Like, there is no one size fits all about how people feel about themselves and want to be authentically themselves in whatever environment they're in. I think it generally comes back to that conversation we were having earlier about the workplace and how important that authenticity, the accountability is in the workplace, because it's still the same thing if you're a sports person or, you know, working in an environment where it might not be perceived that it's okay to be gay. It's just about that normalcy. I think you're absolutely right, Mark. And I think having more visible individuals, well, I guess within the creative industry or whatnot, that people can see, that it's just going to help. So I think that's why things like EastEnders, and I slightly laughed at your point that you made about the first gay kiss. And, you know, I'd spent some time working at EastEnders, and you never underestimate the power of an incredible continuing drama like that, and what that show has done to move storylines forward. And maybe they could go back and watch it now. I haven't seen that scene for a while. I don't know who wrote it or how they handled it or whatever.
Same with Brookside, wasn't it? With the lesbian kids. You know, there's been these pivotal moments which kind of changed. But now you look at TV advertising, and it clearly shows two women together, you know, which is, again, it's brilliant because it normalizes it. And that's the most important thing here. It's like, you're not a weirdo anymore. It's like, you are, it's all about you, and it's about your expression. And again, the freedom to be who you want to be. And I, you know, thank goodness we have that, you know, because like you say, Ben, there's a lot of societies where you're still not allowed to be gay. You know, which is a completely different subject. You know, we were kind of getting into that, but, you know, I'm very privileged and lucky to, you know, to be where I am in the world, quite frankly.
And just, guys, we're almost out of time, so I just wanted to just bring it back to a few specifics, if I may, because a lot of people who may well be younger, more junior than you guys, who are in a working environment and have told colleagues they're gay, and may happen to you as well. And those colleagues are, you know, they're not, it's all then a bit awkward. Do you see what I mean? How do you deal with that? Because, I mean, I would love to believe that that doesn't happen anymore, but it clearly does. So have you got any advice for people? Do you just walk away and tell them to get on with it? Or, you know, how have you dealt with that over the years?
I mean, I have to say that, again, I think I said it earlier, it's usually what you build up in your brain is actually not reality. And I have to say, you know, with coming out with my family, my colleagues, my friends, has just been nothing but positive. Like, I've never, ever had any negativity at all. Everyone has been super supportive and actually just respect you more because they're just like, okay, cool. Like, kind of, let's get on with it. You know, we love you. We don't, you know, whoever you are, like, we love you for who you are, you know. And I think that's a really important message to say. It's like, you know, just love who you are. You know, being human is the best thing in the world. You know, diversity is the best thing in the world. It makes life colorful. You know, like, it's that saying, isn't it? If it was all the same, the world would be boring. And absolutely, you know, let's celebrate diversity. Let's celebrate who we are, because that is humanity.
Well, maybe that's a really nice way to end it, because in that sense, that question is irrelevant. Do you agree with that, Daniel? Or have you had a different experience?
No, I think, you know, I fully agree with everything you've just said, Mark. And you're right. I, again, too, have been really lucky. I don't know, if lucky is the right word here.
I don't think it is. No, it's not.
My family treat me with the same respect and respectful of who I am and love me. And my friends were brilliant. And, you know, there's a couple of crunchy moments along the way, mainly because I think I put some of those barriers up. But, you know, I was talking about doing this podcast with another colleague of mine who is senior and brilliant, and she's gay. And she said, oh yeah, no, I had a thing in my PR agency. I was out with clients and we were talking away, and I mentioned my wife, and the colleague that I was with afterwards absolutely reamed me for, you know, talking openly about my wife and how people don't want to hear that. And, you know, she was really taken aback by that. And I think you just can't ever take for granted that you never quite know what someone's going to think. But I think, you know, your question, Ben, was about advice and what do you do in that situation. And I think every situation where there's conflict is an opportunity for it's an opportunity for growth. That sounds really like really post-it note-y, like, well, but, you know, if an individual is opposed to you because of who you are, then it's an opportunity to ask questions, open a dialogue, and talk to your workplace about it. Don't let it go because that person is a bit of, you know, of a fool. Don't stand for it, but also doesn't define you. Someone else's opinion of you doesn't define you. And if you don't find yourself in a position where you can be yourself at work, perhaps it's not the right fit for you.
I have to say as well, you know, like, thankfully there's policies now, no one stands for hatred. You know, if someone bullies you at work, then you go to people, HR, you know, like they're on your side. You know, like we're lucky that law is in place now to stop any of that and to discriminate on sexuality, race, kind of disability, you know, like we can't. That stuff is just going to be quashed straight away. But I think Daniel's right. It's all about education. It's about talking. It's about sharing. It's about learning from one another and basically openness. Yeah. I think openness is, you know, is the best thing in the world.
Mark Allenby and Daniel Maynard, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ben. It's been wonderful. For me, it's such a liberating thing to be able to talk so openly with you. And thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Ben and Mark. Always a good conversation. Mark, I think, you know, you grew up in a very similar place to me, not that far from me, actually. And, you know, even our experiences are totally different. And so it's always good to have these conversations to remind ourselves that you never know anybody else's story. And it's good to talk.
It is. Can I just end on a quote from Oscar Wilde? I love this quote.
Yes, love Oscar Wilde.
It's brilliant. It's be yourself as everyone else is taken.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.